Good morning, everyone. I've got a letter. Have Mr. Cowan make a copy of it from Gary Johnson to all those of you that have contacted him, and he sent me a letter, and I'll just have a couple copies made. I'll drop one off here. And
I may have it.
You may get the same letter?
He sent one to Bob.
Okay. I still am going to have you make me a copy because I need to take it to Knoxville to see you were. Can't win, can you? He told me he sent it to people, but then I have people that I know he didn't send it to. So, all right. I heard coming over here today, we did on the news that Iran released four of the people in the United States, that pastor and the newspaper reporter, and supposedly it was four, which is good. Suppose we gave them either six or seven prisoners, and we don't know who they are yet. I can only imagine what they're like. But, we gave giving them $150 billion for this nuclear deal. So I think this is not going to end real well, but God is in control. He knows what's going on. I thought I would, if you want to turn to Numbers 14, because I want us to take a look at something here that I've always found interesting to me, because sometimes when we read through the Bible, things pop out that just, you can almost read over things without even hardly realizing it's there. But now in Numbers 13, that's when the spies were sent into the land of Canaan, the 12 spies, and the spies came back, and this was the promised land that God was going to give Israel. And the spies came back and said, "Oh, we can't take it; it's too hard." And you know the story. And of course, Joshua and Caleb were the only two of the spies that said, "Well, yes, we can take it; God will deliver us," and so forth. Well, so we read about that in chapter 13, and then in Numbers 14, the first verse, I guess, can sum things up. It says, "Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron. And they were like, we can't do this. We can't do it." Well, I can read on down, but dropping down to verse 11. "The Lord said to Moses, 'How long will these people reject me?'" Meaning reject God. "And how long will they not believe me," meaning believe God, "with all the signs which I performed among them?" And then God mentions what he's going to do to Israel, that he's going to turn away from Israel. Now Moses, and I'm not going to read all of this, but Moses, the story, Moses pleaded with God not to do it, not to do it. And Moses said, verse 15, "If you kill these people as one man, then the nations which have heard of your fame will speak, saying, 'Because the Lord is not able to bring this people to the land which he swore to them.' Therefore he killed them in the wilderness." In other words, it would be God's fault, what people would say. And Moses asked God to forgive them, or not to do that. And in verse 20, okay, I want to just start there, just kind of summarize things up to that point. In verse 20, "Then the Lord said, 'I pardoned according to your word, Moses. You asked me to pardon them, I'm going to do it. But truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord,'" here's what God said to Moses. And then he says, "Because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have put me to the test now these 10 times, and have not obeyed my voice, they certainly shall not see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it." And then he mentions how Caleb and Joshua, because they had a different spirit, they would see the promised land. Now, I don't know if you've thought about this, but in Exodus, when the Israelites leave Egypt, up to this point, Numbers 14, which includes all the rest of Exodus, all the book of Leviticus, and Numbers up to this time. Now, we hear and know that the Israelites, wandered in the wilderness, is, I guess, a way to put it, for 40 years. Well, at this point in Numbers 14, this was only like a year. This is only 1 year. From Numbers 14 to the end of Deuteronomy are the other 39 years. And we sort of seem like, oh, they've been wandering all this time. But no, this was the point where they were supposed to go in and take the land, and they refused to do it. Now, where is the point that I want to get here? Well, notice again a verse that we just read that it's very easy to miss something if we're not paying attention. Verse 22, I read it just a minute ago, but I want to look at it a little closer this time. God, the Word, who came Jesus Christ, said, because these men who have seen my glory, those men that went into the spies and the men and women that came out of Egypt, these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have put me to the test, notice, now these 10 times? Do you wonder, what does he mean by 10 times? Well, between leaving Egypt and this point right here, about a year, we can look at 10 specific times the children of Israel just tested God big time. And I thought what we might want to do today is take a look at that. Take a look at those 10 times. Now, if you notice, before I look at go back, verse 18 and 19, where we are in chapter 14, when Moses is asking God, please don't destroy them. Please don't destroy these people. And Moses says in verse 17, 18, 19, Moses says, I pray, let the power of my Lord be great, just as you have spoken, saying, the Lord is long-suffering and abundant in mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers and the children of the third and fourth generation. He said, pardon the iniquity of this people, I pray, according to your greatness of your mercy, just as you've forgiven this people from Egypt until now, for that period of time. And that's basically a direct quote from Exodus chapter 34 after the golden calf incident. But that's neither here nor there. But let's take a look today at the 10 times Israel failed to believe in God right after they left Egypt with all these mighty miracles that God provided for them. Now, a couple, most of them are going to be in the Old Testament, but a couple of verses I wanted to look at first. One is Romans chapter 15, where Paul is talking, or speaking, writing. And in verse 4 of Romans 15, the Apostle Paul says, for whatever things were written before, so in the Old Testament, all the words of God that were written before were written for our learning, that we, through the patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. So, God had the Bible written for our learning and for our comfort and patience to help us to understand. And another scripture, I was over in 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10. And I'll just read it several verses, but I'm just going to read verse 11 of 1 Corinthians 10, where it says, now all these things, and he had just rehearsed some of the things that went on back in when the Israelites were leaving Egypt. He says, all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for Christians, admonition, on whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let anyone who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. And it's very easy to talk a big talk. Now, I remember a quote. Let's turn back to Exodus 14. But I remember a quote of Winston Churchill that I heard once, where Winston Churchill, we have these fears and we have these worries, and these Israelites sure had a lot of fears and a lot of worries, and they didn't handle it as well, and they saw these miracles of God, and they just, as if God didn't have any power the way they seemed to act. But I had a quote I wrote down that Winston Churchill said once. He said, I've had a great deal of problems in my life, But most of them never happened. And you know how we get these ideas, oh, what am I going to do about this if this happens? What am I going to do about that if that happens? And all this worrying. Well, this is basically what happened to the Israelites. What happened to the Israelites? The first time of the 10 times is found in Exodus 14. Exodus 14, I'm just going to look at each of these briefly, not go into the whole scripture because I could spend an entire sermon on just any one of these, basically. But in Exodus 14, you know how God released the Israelites from Egypt, and they went out, as I said, with a high hand. And in Exodus 14, we see about the Red Sea crossing. In verse 8, after the people left Egypt, verse 8, Exodus 14, and the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel. Now notice, in the children of Israel, they went out with boldness. Man, they'd seen miracles. What a miracle. They were released from bondage, and they were going out with boldness and power, and it was just a wonderful feeling. On the surface, they had this great confidence in God, but verse 9, the Egyptians pursued them. All the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh started coming after them, even after God had done these things, these miracles to them. And they're all excited, but then the Egyptians started pursuing them. And the horsemen of Pharaoh and his army, and they overtook them camping by the sea at this place. And then in verse 10, when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel, you know, right after they left Egypt, right on the way out, they hadn't even crossed the Red Sea yet. The children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them. So they were afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, and notice what they said. Then they said to Moses, right off the bat when they're leaving, haven't even got through the Red Sea yet. Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away where we can die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? In other words, why did we ever leave Egypt? Right off the bat. Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, Moses, saying, let us alone. We don't want to leave Egypt, basically is what it says. Let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in this wilderness. Moses told him, don't be afraid. Stand still. You're going to see God intervene. Verse 13, Moses said, don't be afraid. Stand still, and you'll see the salvation of the Lord, which he'll accomplish to you today. For the Egyptians who you see today, you shall see them no more forever. So the Lord's going to fight for you. You're going to hold your peace. Just be quiet and watch, is what he was telling them. The Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. I'm releasing you. Go. Walk. Get off your duff and move. You know, this great deliverance, and they're already afraid. Now, yes, it's the way human beings are. When you see armies and things, you tend to forget other things that have happened, but right off the bat, they were afraid. And, quite frankly, they tested God in this way. Now, let's turn over to chapter 15. You know, I'm not going to read the rest of chapter 14, but God sent them through that Red Sea, and you know the story, the sea parted, and then the Egyptians drowned in the sea when they tried to chase them. And then in chapter 14, we see the song of Moses, where he spoke the words about what God had done for them. And then we see in verse 20 the song of Miriam, the sister of Aaron, when she cried out. In fact, in verse 21 of Exodus 15, Miriam answered them and said, she sang this song, sing to the Lord. He's triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider he's thrown into the sea. They were praising God because of the fact that God released them. despite their lack of faith. Well, number two is in chapter, right where we are, the very next three verses. Verse 22, Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness. And there were 3 days in the wilderness, and they found no water. They came to Marah. They couldn't drink the water because it was bitter, and they named the place Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink? We need water. What are you going to do, Moses?" So they cried out to the Lord. Who did? Moses did. They didn't. They were arguing with Moses. "What are you going to get us some water, Moses?" So they cried out to the Lord, or Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. And when he cast it into the waters were made sweet, and there he made a statute and an ordinance for them. And there he meaning God, as you see, capital letter, there he, God, tested them. And notice what God said. "If you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight and give ear to his commandments and keep his statutes." Well, this was Exodus 15. The Ten Commandments were not spoken by God until Exodus 20. So the commandments were already in place. But he says, if you'll give ear to his commandments, keep his statutes, I'm going to put none of those diseases on you which I brought on the Egyptians. So they saw the diseases that the Egyptians had. "For I am the Lord who heals you." Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. So they camped there by the waters. So they were out. God helped them, showed them they would get through the Red Sea. And then 3 days later, they didn't have water. They're calling out to God and to Moses, complaining. Now, it's kind of like once you become a Christian and the newness sort of wears off, you start sometimes doubting and being negative about things. I've seen that happen more than you would realize, more than you would know. Some people seem to think the job of the church is to serve them. Did you hear that? Some people think the job of the church is to serve them. They don't really want to do anything for anyone else. Believe me, I'm sure you've seen it. I've seen it over the years. Some people think they're just supposed to sit back and be served. Now, we're to serve each other, aren't we? But some people, they don't want to do their part. They just want to sit and expect people to serve them. Well, this is sort of what the Israelites were saying to Moses. Like they didn't have the faith that God was going to give them water. And then he gave them the water, and they had this lovely place they were at. And they murmured a second time. Number three, very next verse. Verse 1 of Exodus 16. Then they journeyed from Elim. Where was Elim? Well, that was where they had the 12 wells of water and the 70 palm trees. So they journeyed from Elim, where they had the good water, the palm trees, all the congregation of Israel, and they came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. Sinai, remember where the Ten Commandments were given. And on the 15th day of the second month, notice that? On the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt, just a little over a month, just a short period of time. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, the second month, the 15th day, "Oh, that we had just died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. Why are we out here? When we sat by the pots of meat." Well, they were slaves in Egypt. We sat by that pots of meat and we ate bread to the full. They made it sound like they were at the feast or something. Like, it was so wonderful back in Egypt. Was it? Of course not. For you, who? You, Moses, and you, Aaron, you brought us out into this wilderness. and you brought us out here to kill us. This whole assembly with hunger. Then the Lord said to Moses, okay, behold, I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them, whether they'll walk in my law or not. Now he continued by telling them, now on the sixth day of the week, that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily, because the next day was the Sabbath. So obviously the Sabbath was already there. Then Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, at evening you're going to know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. Now, if you notice, you know, God was preparing them to show them he was going to provide for their needs. And if you notice, when they cried out, it was as if God was the problem, or Moses and Aaron were the problem. Like, they didn't have any problems. It was somebody else's problem. As if it had nothing to do with themselves. I remember a friend once telling me, they relate to church, and it's just kind of a funny story, I thought. They said, well, you know, I kept caught in all these lights, these red lights. He said, I think Satan was just making these lights turn red. No, he was late because he left late. But, you know, you got to have a reason. Okay, that was number three. Number four, same chapter. You know, these things are happening so fast. Same chapter, verse 16 of Exodus 16. So, verse 16, this is the thing which the Lord has commanded, let every man gather according to his needs, one omer for each person, according to the number of persons, let every man take for those who are in his tents. In other words, go out and gather each day the manna that God was dropping down from heaven, and the children of Israel did so, gathered, some gathered more, some gathered less. So when they measured it by an omer, he who gathered much had nothing over, and he who gathered little had no lack. Every man gathered according to each one's needs. And Moses said, don't let no one leave any of it till the morning, because they were told to eat it each day, and God would provide more the next day. And, of course, on the sixth day, you were to ask for half as much. So Moses said, don't let anybody, you know, don't leave any till the morning. Notwithstanding, they did not heed or listen to Moses. But some of them left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. Why did it breed worms and stink? Because they gathered more, and they just thought they would, you know, hoard. And God had told them, I'm going to provide you enough each day. And Moses was angry with them. Moses was not happy. So they didn't collect manna the way God told them to. Some did, some didn't. They ignored God's instruction, so it stank. That was number four. Number five follows right along with number four. Number five begins in verse 23 of Exodus 16. Here's what Moses said to the children of Israel. Then he said to them, this is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept in the morning. Because remember, they were on this sixth day, they were to get twice as much, where they'd have enough for the next day. So they laid it up the morning, as Moses commanded, and it didn't stink. Isn't that amazing? They did what God told Moses, told them to do, and they did what he said, and it worked out okay. And there weren't any worms in it. Big, good deal. Then Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you'll not find any in the fields. Because he had told them to gather twice as much the sixth day. So we just read a few minutes ago. He said, 6 days you'll gather it, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there won't be any. That's why I told you to get twice as much on the sixth day. And the Lord verse 27, now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to get that manna, and there wasn't any. They found none. And the Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? How long? He said, see, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, he gives you the six-day bread for 2 days. Let every man remain in his place. Don't go out on the Sabbath to try to get this manna, because I'm giving you enough already. You know, the definition of a liberal, I looked in Webster's Dictionary. Definition of a liberal is open to new behavior or opinions and willing to discard traditional values. In other words, traditional values, I mean, who wants to keep, you know, it's like, oh no, we need new and better things. Remember Mr. Armstrong once said that a liberal often is one who, if it doesn't say thou shalt do or thou shalt not do, they say, well, we'll do whatever we want to do. But yet, it's classic. They told them to gather twice as much on the sixth day, and some of them went out on the seventh day, and there wasn't any manna. And who were they upset with? Moses and God. Verse 30 of chapter 16, the people rested on the seventh day. Okay, so that's five of them. They hadn't been out of Egypt very long, had they? Let's look at number 6, chapter 17. They all just one after another. And like when I read right at the beginning of the sermon, that verse it said, they've tested me these 10 times. I mean, major tests, these 10 times. And yet God, does this not show you how patient God is? How much God puts up with? They had barely been out of Egypt, and they're still going about everything they're fussing and complaining about. They don't want to follow the rules. Okay, chapter 17, verse 1. And then all the congregation of the children of Israel, they set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin. We saw where they got there just a couple chapters back, a few days earlier. According to the commandment of the Lord, they camped in Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. Well, we saw that already, didn't we? Right there, right off the bat after they left Egypt. Therefore, no water. They didn't think, well, God's going to provide the water. Hadn't they seen him provide it before? So they contended with Moses, and they said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, now this is, you know, old English language, but can you imagine what it must have been like to be Moses? He says, why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord? In other words, he's like saying, don't you know God will give you water? And the people, they thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses, and they said, something fairly familiar here. Notice what they said. Why is it that you, Moses, have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us? Now they're going to bring their children, and our children, and our livestock with thirst. Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do with this people? Can't you just see how Moses had to have felt? What shall I do with this people? They're about ready to stone me. The Lord said to Moses, go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take in your hand your rod and which you struck the river and go. Remember when he struck the river and the Red Sea parted that God told him to do. And he said, behold, I'm going to stand before you there on the rock of Horeb, and you're to strike the rock, and water's going to come out of it, and the people will drink. And Moses did so in the sight of all the elders of Israel, and so he called the name of the place Massa and Meribah. It's because of the contention of the children of Israel, and because, notice, they tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? You know, they didn't get their way, so must be God's fault. Well, we're going to skip a few chapters here. Things kind of go pretty good here for a while. Because then we see the Ten Commandments given in chapter 20, where God spoke the words. And you know the story where Moses went up to the mountain and God wrote the Ten Commandments with his own hands on those tablets of stone. But let's get down to chapter 32. The golden calf incident, the one everybody probably remembers, realizes. You know, Moses had stayed up there on the mountain a while. They had just received all the might and the power of God and had the Ten Commandments spoken from the Word of God and all the power and the thunders and the lightnings and all the things. But Moses was up in the mountain with God, as God told him to be up there for, I think it was 40 days, and they began to wonder where he was. Chapter 32, verse 1. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron. And they said to Aaron, now notice what they say to Aaron, come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't even know what has come of him. Well, that 40 days was just too long. Where is he? And Aaron, I've never understood this one, but Aaron told him to break off the golden earrings, which were in their ears, of their wives and their sons and their daughters, and bring them to me. So the people broke off the golden earrings, which were in their ears, and they brought them to Aaron. And Aaron received the gold from their hand. He fashioned it with an engraving tool and made them a molten calf. And then they said, This is your God. Not the God that spoke the Ten Commandments. This is your God, O Israel. This is the God that brought you out of the land of Egypt. An idol. Directly breaking the second of the Ten Commandments. So Aaron saw it. He built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow is going to be a feast to the Lord. And they rose up early, and the next day they offered burnt offerings. They brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And God, the Lord, said to Moses, who's up there in the mountain still, go get down. For your people, God's got a little sense of humor here. They're God's people, but God said, Moses, your people, who you brought out of Egypt, they've corrupted themselves. They've turned aside quickly out of the way I commanded them. They've made themselves a molten calf. And they've worshipped it, and they've sacrificed to it, and said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord said to Moses, I've seen this people. I have seen this people. Boy, they're a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone that my wrath may burn hot against them, that I may consume them. And I'll make you a great nation, Moses. Now, God, of course, can do anything, but it was almost like Moses entreated and pleaded God to not do it. Moses pleaded with the Lord his God and said, Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people? Whom you, not me, not Moses, but you, God, you brought them out of the land of Egypt. With great power and with a mighty hand, why should the Egyptians speak and say you brought them out to harm them, to kill them? Exactly what they were saying was happening, the children of Israel, which of course wasn't happening. Why would the Egyptians say he brought them out to kill them in the mountains and consume them from the face of the earth? Turn from your fierce wrath and relent from this harm of your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self, said, I'm going to multiply these descendants as the stars of heaven and all the land which I spoke and give to your descendants, and they shall inherit. And the Lord relented from the harm which he had said he would do to his people. And aren't we glad he did? You know, even Aaron turned weak. Now you can read the story, but Moses came down and he saw what was happening, and Moses was angry. Verse 21 through 24, just breaking into the subject here. Moses said to Aaron, "What did this people do to you that you brought so great a sin upon them? You made this golden. I mean, what? Why, Aaron? Why?" is what Moses said. And Aaron said, "Now don't let the anger, don't be hot, don't be upset with me. You know the people, that they're set on evil. For they said, 'Make us gods that shall go before us.' And as for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him." And I said, "Well, whoever has any gold, let them break it off." So they gave it to me, and I cast in the fire, and this shazam, this calf just came out. That was number 7. Number 8, let's move on over. You know, Leviticus is mainly giving laws of sacrifice and various and sundry things. But let's move over to Numbers chapter 10. Again, we're still in a early in the time of Israel leaving Egypt. Less than a year. But Numbers chapter 10, verse 11. Now it came to pass, so we're into the second year now. Like I said, the first year. We're in the second year now since they left Egypt. Because notice, Numbers 10, verse 11, "Now it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month in the second year." So, well, we got 14 months here. "That the cloud was taken up from above the tabernacle of the testimony, and the children of Israel set out from the wilderness of Sinai." Remember, that's where the Ten Commandments were given. "On their journeys, and then the cloud settled down in the wilderness of Paran." So time's going on. So they're ready to go into the promised land. Now, was there any way the Israelites could have lost sight of God's power? The cloud, the pillar of fire, the manna, the tabernacle. I mean, we could go in and go over all these various things, but it's explaining these things, which you'd have to go back and read different chapters talking about it. But notice again, like it said, all these various things that God had given them. So they started out, verse 13, "for the first time, according to the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses, and the standard of the camp of the children of Judah set out first, according to the armies. And then each of the tribes of Israel marched out." And we get on to, I could read all of chapter 10, but let's just drop down to chapter 11 and see the ninth. Well, actually, we're still on the 8th. Chapter 11, verse 1, is the 8th one, time they complained. That's verse 1. "Now when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it. And his anger was aroused, so the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some on the outskirts of the camp." So they complained, God heard it, and some were consumed. "And the people cried out to Moses. Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire was quenched." Then we come to number 9. Verse 4 of Numbers 11, chapter 11. "Now the mixed multitude." What's the mixed multitude? Well, keep your place in Numbers 11, but let's turn back to Exodus 12. When the Israelites were leaving Egypt, just dropping down to verse 37, this is when they're leaving Egypt, the Exodus. Verse 37 of Exodus 12. "Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides children. And a mixed multitude went up with them." A mixed multitude. So they weren't all Israelites that left. There were some non-Israelites that left with Israel when they left to go to the promised land. "A great deal of livestock," and you can read on. But now we see about this, it's not just the Israelites, some of the non-Israelites are in here too. The mixed multitude, verse 4 of chapter 11. Who are among them? They yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, who is going to give us meat to eat? You know, they had all this manna, but now they want meat to eat. We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt. Again, they don't seem to remember that there were slaves, but we remember the fish we ate, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There's nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. So now they're sick of this manna. Now the manna was like coriander seed, the color like the color of bdellium, whatever that is. But they seem to have forgotten what it was like to have been a slave. Dropping down. Well, I'll just continue reading here in verse 8. The people went about. They gathered it, gathered the manna. They ground it with millstones. They beat it in a mortar. They cooked it in pans. They made cakes of it. And its taste was like the taste of pastry prepared with oil. But they got tired of the same thing. Again, this is just a short time, a little over a year after they'd left Egypt. And when the dew fell on the camp at night, the manna fell on it. Now Moses, this is number 9 here, Moses heard the people weeping throughout the families. Everyone at the door of his tent. And the anger of the Lord was greatly aroused, and Moses also was displeased. Moses had just about had all he could take of these people. He was getting sick of being their leader. And Moses had a temper, and his temper got him in trouble more than once. But notice what Moses said here. Moses said to the Lord, verse 11, why have you afflicted your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight, that you have laid the burden of all these people on me? Well, yeah, I'm sure he was sick and tired of these people and the gripe and the complaining. Now, they didn't appreciate him. And Moses, continuing here, talking out to God, did I conceive these people? Did I beget them? That you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a guardian carries a nursing child of the land which you swore to your fathers. Where am I going to get meat to feed these people? For they weep all over me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I'm not able to bear all these people, is what Moses was saying to God, because the burden's too heavy for me. If you treat me like this, would you just please kill me here and now? And, you know, I can understand how Moses would have felt. If I found favor in your sight, then don't let me see my wretchedness. Moses had that little temper tantrum, so to speak. But then he said, but God, you know, don't let me see what I am. Just calling out and calling out the people now for meat. So, verse 16, the Lord said to Moses, gather me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them to the tabernacle of meeting, that they may stand before me. And so I'm going to do something, basically, is what God was saying here. Then I'm going to come down, God said to Moses, and I'm going to talk with you there. And I'm going to take of the Spirit that is upon you, and I'll put some upon them. They're going to help bear the burden with you, that you may not bear it all alone by yourself. And then you shall say to the people, sanctify yourselves for tomorrow, for you're going to eat meat tomorrow. For you have wept in the hearing of the Lord, saying, who'll give us meat to eat? Like God couldn't provide that. And for it was so well when we're in Egypt. Therefore, the Lord's going to give you meat, and you're going to eat meat. You're not going to eat meat just for one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days. But I'm going to give you meat for a whole month until it comes out of your nostrils. I think God might be a little upset here. Until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have despised the Lord who is among you. And you wept before Him, and you said, why did we ever come up out of Egypt? They keep saying that. Why can't we go back to Egypt? Then Moses said to the people. Well, I can read on, but let's just drop down to verse 25. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him, spoke to Moses, and took the spirit that was upon him and placed the same spirit upon the 70 elders, and it happened when the spirit rested upon them that they prophesied, although they never did so again. But two men remained in the camp. One's name was Eldad, and the other's name was Medad. And the Spirit rested upon them, and now they were among those listed, but who had not gone out of the tabernacle, yet they prophesied in the camp. And we can read on here, but let's drop down to verse 31. Now a wind went out from the Lord, and it brought quail from the sea. And it left these quail fluttering near the camp about a day's journey on this side and about a day's journey on the other side. So, you know, what you'd walk on each day, like 2 days, there's all this quail everywhere, all around the camp, and about 2 cubits above the surface of the ground. So it was just right above the ground, that quail. The people stayed up all the next day and all that night. And all the next day. And what do? They gather the quail. Because he who gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they who spread them out for themselves all around the camp. But while the meat was still between their teeth, didn't even want to cook it. While the meat was still between their teeth, before it was even chewed, the wrath of the Lord was aroused against the people. And the Lord struck the people with a very great plague because they refused to obey God. And he called the name of the place, whatever that is, because they buried the people who yielded to the craving. So a number of them even died. In verse 1 of the very next chapter, then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, because he had married an Ethiopian woman. And then you see dissension between Moses and Aaron. So that was number 9. Dropping down to the 10th one, chapter 14. Now see chapter 13, they send the spies to look out the promised land, and they came back and said, oh, we can't take this. This is too hard. Didn't want to consider the fact that God told them he was going to give this to them. How many times have we heard this over and over and over when what we've read? Then why can't we go back to Egypt? Why can't we do this? Why can't we do that? Oh, why did we have to be released from slavery? So they've come back. The spies are back. Let's look at verse 1 of chapter 14, where I think we began earlier. Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and they cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we died in the wilderness, if only we just didn't have to be here. What? 15 months after they were released. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword? What are they saying? Oh, we're going to die because these people over there are big and we can't go in there. They're going to all kill us. Why did God do this to us? Why are we here? Why can't we go back to Egypt? That our wives and our children should become victims. Would it not have been better for us just to return to Egypt? And notice what they said then. So they said to one another, here's what we're going to do. Let us go select a leader and go back to Egypt. Forget this Moses. We're going to go back to Egypt. We got to get some other person. We're going to go back and say we're sorry. We won't be slaves again. Verse 10, all the congregation said they're going to stone them with stones. I could read the whole verses here, but they got so upset with Moses, said, we're going to stone them. Now, the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the meeting before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? How long will they not believe me? With all the signs that I performed, with all the miracles that I've done among them, I'm going to strike them with a pestilence, I'm going to disinherit them, and I'm going to make you, Moses, a nation greater and mightier than they. And Moses said to the Lord, remember he did this back at the golden calf incident, didn't he? Moses said to the Lord, if you do this, then the Egyptians are going to hear it. Remember we read this earlier back in, I think it was Exodus 32. If you do this, the Egyptians are going to hear about it. For your might, by your might you brought these people out from among them. And they'll tell it to the inhabitants of the land, and they've heard that you, the Lord, are among these people, that you, the Lord, are seen face to face, and that you have the cloud stand above them. And you go before them in a pillar of cloud in the day and a pillar of fire by night. If you kill these people as one man, then the nations which have heard your fame are going to speak and say, because the Lord wasn't able to do this, wasn't able to bring them. Therefore, he killed them in the wilderness. Now I pray, let the power of my Lord be great. Moses is saying this to God, the Word who became Jesus Christ. Now let the power of my Lord be great, just as you've spoken, saying the Lord is long-suffering. This is a direct quote from Exodus 34. I think it's there's two verses in Exodus 34. You can look it up. You can see the parallel. But it says, the Lord's long-suffering. He's abundant in mercy. He's forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he by no means clears the guilty. You could read on and on and on and on and on. And that's when God said, I pardon according to your word. In verse 21, but as truly as I live, God said, all the earth is going to be filled with my glory. Everyone's going to submit to God at the proper time. They may not want to submit now, but God will be submitted to. It says, because all these men, verse 22, is where we began the sermon, all these men who have seen my glory, saw all the things God did, and all the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and it put me to the test now these 10 times. We saw those 10 times. And I'm sure there were many, many other times, but these are the 10 that the Bible mentions, specifically mentions. They haven't heeded my voice, and they're not going to enter the land. God is obviously, by reading what we've read today, obviously, clearly, much more inclined to mercy than what we deserve. Look at the mercy God just gave these Israelites. Over and over and over and over again, even to the point they were going to appoint a leader and go back to Egypt. As I said, God is obviously far more inclined to mercy than what we deserve. And we very seldom get what we deserve. And there was pardon, but there was justice, wasn't it? Those men and women who rejected God and Israelites did not enter the promised land as they wandered for years, and their children entered, but yet only Joshua and Caleb. So what's the point in summation, I guess you could say, for what we've looked at today? Well, I turned to a number of places, but I think I'll turn to Psalm 34. Psalm 34, as we wrap this up. When I look at the mercy God showed the Israelites, and when I work the mercy God shows the descendants of the Israelites, He's a merciful God, but He's a just God. And at some point, all the earth will submit to God. Verse 1 of Psalm 34, David says, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise will continually be in my mouth. Verse 4, I sought the Lord and He heard me. He delivered me from all my fears. They looked to Him and were radiant, and their faces were not ashamed. The poor man cried out, and the Lord heard him, and He saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around all those who fear Him, and He delivers them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in Him. Oh, fear the Lord, you His saints. There is no want to those who fear Him. And honor God and respect God. Let's close by turning to Hebrews 3. Hebrews talks a lot about the priesthood and the sacrifices, and that the animal sacrifices are no longer required after the death of the perfect sacrifice, Jesus Christ. But in Hebrews 3, he's talking to Christians here, breaking into a part or point. But in verse 16 of Hebrews 3, it says, "For who, having heard, rebelled?" He's talking about the old Israelites that we just read about today. It says, Who rebelled? It says, "Indeed, was it not all who came out of Egypt led by Moses? They murmured and complained and tested God over and over and over again. Now with whom was He angry?" Who was God angry for these 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, the ones that wouldn't obey? Was it not those who sinned, whose corpses fell in the wilderness? And to whom did God swear that they would not enter His rest? But to those, the answer, those who would not obey. So we see they couldn't enter because of unbelief. Those Israelites that said, "We can't do it. We're going back to Egypt." Instead of listening to what Joshua and Caleb said, said, "God's going to take care of us." Moses said, "God will take care of us." And no, God can't do that. Verse 1 and 2 of Hebrews 4. Therefore, since a promise remains of entering His rest, you know, the resurrection, eternal life, and the kingdom of God, let us fear, lest any of you seem to have come short of it. For indeed, the gospel was preached to us as well as to them. You know, in a sense, the truth of God was preached all that time to all those Israelites in the wilderness. For indeed, the gospel was preached to us as well as to them, but the word which they heard, it didn't profit them. Why? Because it was not mixed with faith to those who heard it. Those Israelites said, "God can't do this for us. God can't help us. God can't save us. We're going back to Egypt." In the same sense, those who become Christians, it's a journey. And we don't want to go back to Egypt.